from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. It's the time of year when high school seniors and their ever-anxious parents find out about college admissions. It's a tense time. Lots seems to ride on whether that envelope that arrives in the mail is fat, good news, or thin, decidedly not good news. But what determines that size of the envelope? One key factor is usually test scores, how well students did on their SAT or ACT exam. But a landmark study out this week challenges the usefulness of those scores, and we're going to take up that topic in our second half hour this morning. Joining us is Bill Hiss. He's the former dean of admissions at Bates College and the principal investigator on a new study that took a look at the usefulness of the SAT and other standardized test exams. Bill Hiss, thanks very much for joining us.
Glad to do it, Dave.
Let's talk about what you found in your study. You took a look at 33 different colleges and universities, private colleges, along with some public universities, along with some that specialize in serving minority student populations, and some art schools as well. These were all schools where submitting your test scores was optional, schools like where you are at Bates College in Maine. And the interesting finding is what? That those who submitted their scores versus those who didn't turned out to be dot, dot, dot?
Yeah, exactly the same. With about 30% of the 123,000 students in the study as non-submitters, the difference in their four-year cumulative GPAs was 5/100ths of a GPA point. The difference in their graduation rates was 0.6%. By any statistical methodology, this is a trivial set of differences. The large measure is that non-submitters, if they have good high school grades, will probably do fine in college, even with a broad array of test scores.
So just to underline this again, if you're someone, as you used to do, reviewing college admissions, and you're looking at all of the data that's before you, not having those magical SAT scores, that 800 that every student dreams that they might get on the SAT, verbal or whatever, in the end really doesn't tell you that much. That if you don't have that data, you can just do just as good a job in deciding who's going to do well at your college basically on what they did in high school.
It did surprise even me as a 20-year-plus dean of admissions how closely the high school GPA seemed to correlate with college GPA. My best guess, and Dave, this is a first national study of optional testing colleges across institutional lines. So I'm enough of a researcher and a scientist and an ethicist to say we'll have to duplicate these studies later on to test the findings. But the message seems to be that students should not make assumptions about themselves based on their test scores. The message clearly is high school grades matter, and they matter a lot. And every dean of admissions in the country, I think, would probably agree with that. Some will agree and disagree with our findings on the testing, but there are broad patterns of benefits for the colleges and universities in at least thinking about this optional testing policy approach. Bates increased its applicant pool from 2,200 to 5,200. Do you get a better class with 2.5 times as many applicants? Of course you do, of course, and on all the scales, not just academic performance. But we also think that it is a way, seeing who the non-submitters are, for colleges and universities, both public and private, to open their doors a little more widely to first generation, to college students, minority students, Pell Grant recipients, that is young people who come from very low income families, and interestingly, students with learning differences of one sort or another, like dyslexia, for example.
So, and I should, by way of full disclosure, I should acknowledge, as you already know, Bill Hiss, that I had a daughter who went to Bates College, and I'm a fan of the school. But what you discovered at Bates and what other institutions have discovered is that if you widen the door, if you say you can submit your scores if you want to, but you don't have to, that you encourage a different kind of population to apply to the school. Is that right?
Yes, and it's largely happening in two different ways, Dave. At the private institutions, they have what are generally called pure optional testing. That is, the student, him or herself, decides whether they want to submit the scores and literally sends them in or doesn't. At the public institutions, they are using what's called a guaranteed or automatic admissions policy, based on high school class rank or GPA, and those institutions, we had 71,000 students from six public universities in our study. Those institutions say, if you meet our criteria on high school GPA or high school rank, then you're automatically in, no matter what your scores are. So it is in some ways a simple and one might say one-dimensional approach to college admissions. The evidence is in our study that it's working beautifully.
I imagine there are people listening right now who are wondering about who these institutions are. And I know that you've protected their privacy so that you could collect their data. But some have self-acknowledged. Bates College is one. Smith College is another. Washington State University, another. So we're talking about school.
And I just heard from another one. Wake Forest University has announced that it is part of the study as well. So they're four. I was protecting the confidentiality of the institutions, but I'm going to write to all the deans in the study now and say, I will protect your confidentiality forever, but it's up to you. If you want to announce that you were part of the study, by all means, be my guest, and my guess is you're going to hear from some media outlets who would like to talk to you about how it's worked for you.
Well, part of why I wanted to raise that point is that I think it's important to know for anxious parents out there and students, yeah, but who's Bill Hiss talking about here? What schools are they? And part of what's interesting about this is if you have colleges like Bates, Wake Forest, and Smith, who are considered to be some of the best small colleges and universities in the country. So this isn't a policy that is just tailor-made for schools that are trying to sort of take one come all.
No, that's right. I think as additional schools decide that they want to announce that they are in the study, the common reaction will be these are name brand institutions. The public institutions include two state flagships, two major state universities in a college, you know, in a state with a flagship, a principal scientific and technical university, and a minority serving institution that's in a state capital, part of a state system, although we counted it only as a public university. We did not double count it as a minority serving institution. If you heard the names of the public institutions, people would say, of course, these are flagships. These are major universities.
I want to take a moment to have you tell us a story, if you would, Bill Hiss. It's a story that I know you wrote about once before, about a student who came to your college, a Vietnamese refugee, a number of years ago, because I think it's illustrative of the kind of if you're willing to roll the dice a bit or make a certain bet on what can happen.
The student lived some of her childhood years in a refugee camp in Hong Kong, and finally was brought to Portland, Maine by the Catholic Charities group and found housing. She helped her mother deal with the death of their father, helped raise her younger brothers and sisters, learned English starting in the 7th or 8th grade, graduated as the valedictorian of 320 young people in her high school, graduated Phi Beta Magna in biology from Bates, earned her medical degree from Brown, and was appointed to the medical faculty of Dartmouth Medical School as an internist.
And her SAT score was?
400, and I share that with her permission. She has given us permission to tell it. She had only been speaking English for about 5 years. And I sometimes say to my fellow deans when I give talks at professional conferences on this topic of optional testing, I will say to them, how did you do on the SAT when you took it in Spanish? or Vietnamese. And sure, the deans would say, quite rightfully so, but students have to be able to work in English at our institution. That's absolutely true, but they don't have to work in a high-speed sorting system in 3 or 4 hours. I'm a faculty member at Bates, it was before I retired, my students have a chance to rewrite their papers, bring them to me for extra help, talk to the writing center, get some advice from other students, and that's how most colleges work. They typically don't work in these high-speed sorting arrangements. I'm beginning to think that, and my hope is from this paper, that colleges and universities will simply start very, very carefully and scientifically looking at their own predictors. The institutions ought to have, both public and private, ought to have an interest in expanding dramatically their applicant pools. If our findings in this study are accurate, that about 30% of the students will choose to be non-submitters, why would a college or university want to have an applicant pool that was 30% smaller? That makes no sense. You want to have the best possible pool that you can arrange of students who will be successful. And what we know now is that if students have strong grades in high school, they will be successful in college, even with a quite wide range of SAT scores.
Bill Hiss is our guest this hour. He's the former dean of admissions at Bates College in Maine, principal investigator on a new study which put forth some fascinating results this week that show that kids who don't choose to submit their test scores wind up doing just as well in college as those who do, and that the grade points of what happens in high school correlate very closely to what they will actually do in college. We're joined now as well by Seth Allen, who is the vice president and dean of admissions and financial aid at Pomona College in Southern California. Mr. Allen, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
You've perhaps heard a little bit of our interview and with Bill Hiss, and you've heard, I know, lots of news about this study this week. Pomona is a college that still requires that SATs be submitted. Does the results of this study make you think twice about whether or not that's really necessary?
Well, I think it's a very important study, and I think, as it has shown for Bates and for other institutions, that if an admissions office feels like it can make decisions without all of the standard elements of an admissions rubric, then it's able to do that. I'm not sure that for who we're trying to select into our class that would be right for us. And I think there's actually a larger question here, because it's not just testing. One could dismantle all of the components of selective admissions and say, are all of these parts really necessary in trying to identify students with potential that can succeed at our institutions?
And what is it that you feel that those SAT scores give you that the rest of a student's high school record does not, that makes them Pomona worthy?
Sure. I don't think in and of itself the testing, I mean, it sort of helps us identify students who are good test takers. But we put that in the larger context of students who are good test takers, who also can perform well in a rigorous high school curriculum, who also have something interesting to say in their essays, who have adults in their lives who can speak significantly and substantively about how they contribute inside the classroom and outside the classroom. So it's really just one data point for us, but we feel it remains an important data point for us. And I think it does, going back to the origins of the test to help create a meritocracy in the admissions process, I think it does help us identify students that perhaps we would overlook in the process if we didn't have strong results from that test that help us say, this is someone worth looking at further.
Bill Hiss, what about that? That it's just one more data point, and the more data points you have, the better. That's essentially also the College Board's argument. We did, by the way, invite the College Board to participate, but they were unable to do so. Here's the press release they sent out this week, which is, quote, "The predictive validity of college entrance exams like the SAT is an essential part of the admissions equation in the vast majority of colleges and universities. In nearly all validity studies, high school GPA and SAT scores in combination are shown to be the best predictor of college success. So I don't think anyone would argue, Bill Hiss, that you should just go on the SAT. They're saying use that in combination. And that's what Seth Allen, that's what the college boards are saying too. But what's wrong with that? Why not have more data?
Well, it makes an assumption, which is precisely what we question in our study, that the SAT is uniformly predictive across populations. That's precisely the assumption we would question. We find it's not predictive across populations. I would agree with Seth that the SATs can still help you find some unnoticed star. All of us know late bloomers. All of us know young people who are in inappropriate schools, and you know the dean of admissions old saying about the SATs was that it enabled Lenny Bernstein as a sort of Jewish genius from a public high school in New York to get into Harvard, where he couldn't be ignored, and that still can happen. I acknowledge that. But I guess my own feeling is that in the main, the SATs are, and I would, say, ACTs or other standardized tests, are simply not predictable enough across populations to require them for everybody. And I think the real danger to our admissions processes is not that experienced deans will misuse the test. I think it is that young people will seek test averages and say, oh, I couldn't get in there. If I could, I couldn't do the work. And they just don't apply. Or they apply under where they should. There has been some very interesting research. This study is, by the way, by no means alone in saying that the SATs have very little predictive value. And you might want to take a look at a recent book called Crossing the Finish Line on public university graduation rates that points to the same thing. Says the SATs have virtually no predictive value and at public universities. That was something we noticed in our study, too, that the predictive value of the SATs seemed to interestingly be higher in the private institutions than in the publics. It's sort of counterintuitive at one level. It becomes a judgment call about how much predictive value you think you're getting from the SATs versus how much they serve to screen out youngsters who any statistician would say would be a false negative. That is, the scores make you think they can't do the work when in fact they can, and our study demonstrates that. There are two other things at work.
Let me hold you there, if I might, Bill, Hiss, just for a moment, because I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation. Parents, students alike, if you're anxiously awaiting the size of the envelope that's going to indicate what school you got into, we'd love to hear from you. 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, if you have a thought or a concern about this. And let me pose this a question that we just got in from Barbara, who writes, if a university doesn't look at SATs, how do they account for the fact that an A from one high school is very different from an A from another? Is that part of what you find the usefulness of them, Seth Allen, that it gives you a sort of common denominator that allows you to make that sort of differentiation?
Well, I don't think we're actually not comparing students in that way. Every student is compared on his or her own merit. If students are compared against one another, it's typically against sort of like students within their school population or similar kinds of schools. Because we also tease out, so a student who earns an A, for example, in an advanced placement in English class and has a very nice letter of recommendation written from their English teacher, but who writes an essay that we feel may be full of mistakes or that does not really sort of convey the intellectual qualities that we're looking for, we're still not going to be real positive about that particular student, even if the SAT score also shows that they have demonstrated an ability to master that portion of the SAT or the ACT test. It's a combination of all of those factors, and that's what holistic admission is.
Let's hear what some of our listeners are thinking about this topic this morning. David joins us first in Palo Alto. David, go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Thank you very much. First thing I want to say is I went from an inner city poor kid to all the way to Harvard Medical School and Stanford. I used to teach for these agencies that tutor for the SAT. And my perspective is that the rich kids are able to take classes and do really well in the SAT, and the poor kids can't. And so there's a disparity there that has nothing to do with a student's ability. It has simply to do with someone's economic ability to be able to prepare for the SAT. I don't think the SAT is very predictive of anything.
Yeah, David, thanks for the observation. Bill Hiss, is that part of what the message you'd like to get out as well, that we're investing too much in preparing to take this exam, and that in turn gives people of means a distinct advantage?
Yes to the first question. I'm not sure about whether it gives them an advantage. It does, certainly, in getting the scores up. No question about that. So on that sort of practical issue, can I increase my scores by spending a fortune on coaching? The answer seems to be probably yes. This study has raised half a dozen other study questions. One of them is, if students are coached and they get their scores up, does that increase their college performance? And the answer is, nobody's done that study yet. We've done some small ones at Bates, and the answer is no. It doesn't get your college grades up, and that means you have false negatives on the bottom and false positives on the top, and it destabilizes the predictive value of the SATs on both ends. I mean, at some point, people may start, who are doing the research, may start to say, like the boy on the side of the road, the emperor doesn't have any clothes on.
Yeah. David, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Nasha in Oakland. Nasha, go ahead, please.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. And I've always thought the SATs was the idea of the emperor had no clothes. When I took the SATs, and this is many years ago, I remember doing the language arts section of the test, and I started thinking, you know, I think a computer is marking this test because there seems to be a pattern. So when I took the math section of the test, I never read one of the questions. I wrote A, B, C, D, B, C, B, A, A, B, C, D. I just did it in a pattern, A, B, 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 C, 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 D, 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 D. Passed the test with flying colors and got admitted to college. I never even read the second half of the test.
Nasha, thanks for the story. Seth Allen, what do you make of that?
Ouch. I think we would like to think that they mean something more than that. I don't know what passing the test with flying colors mean. We're not trying to make fine judgments by 10 points on one section of the test versus, 20 points less on another section of the test. We're looking at this, again, I think, in combination. So the student who sort of performs as we're expecting on the standardized tests, but also writes an essay that really conveys something we think is meaningful, who has adults who are writing in and not just offering standard praise, but really telling us how this student functions in the classroom or in the school or in their local community, that all of those things taken in combination gives us some confidence that the students that we're admitting, in fact, have that kind of potential and that ability to succeed in our environment. And of course, that's different for different institutions, but we're all trying to do the same thing, which is to not set students up for failure when they enter our institutions.
Seth Allen, if you had to just pick, and I know your point is that the more data, the better, but do you, though, in the end feel that if you had to just look at a kid's overall college high school record and got a sense of what they had done in school, that is, in the end, probably the best predictor of what they're likely to do at a school like Pomona?
So let me answer it this way. I looked at our data real quickly before coming over for this interview. So 80% of the students who provided us with a high school rank, or their schools provided us with a rank last year, were in the top decile of their graduating class. That means they were doing very well in rigorous courses. We admitted 14% of our students last year. So if we only relied on the high school record, how would we actually make choices, since we admit less than 1 in 5 students who have those sorts of very good academic records? And that is why we use all of these other data points to try to help provide a complete picture of who the student is and how we think they'll fit at our institution.
got a number of questions. I want to see if we can touch on this in the short amount of time we have remaining about the business aspects of this. Jennifer writes, as the parent of a high school senior who performed exceptionally well on tests, I applaud this study. The testing industry is big business that costs families tons of money to prove. And William wants to chime in on that point as well. William, your question on that, please.
Yes. With respect to the emperor and the clothes, the only industry that was threatened when it was revealed that the emperor had no clothes was the industry made up of charlatan wizards, a very small percentage of the population. However, in this situation, we're dealing with a billion-dollar industry, and I'm putting too much attention on little things, but you said that they were unable to attend when you contacted the educational testing service. I, for one, find it impossible to believe that they didn't have anybody, such a large company couldn't have someone appear.
Well, let me clarify, William, and I need to hold you there because we're short on time. We invited James Montoya, the head of the SAT, to participate. He was unable to do so. But on that point, briefly, Bill Hiss and then Seth Allen, do you think the SATs are threatened by this? Should they be threatened by this? Would you like to see them no longer play such a significant role in the college admissions process? Bill Hiss.
I think we will be many years before the SATs die a death on the vine, and I wouldn't argue for that. I do think that trying to design a single standardized test to have validity across enormously wide populations is, frankly, an ethical and a psychometric trip up a blind alley. I think it can't be done, and I agree with Seth. You know, having the multiple lights to understand young people is good, but I find enormously promising that the state universities are doing this successfully without the kind of very careful and attentive detail to multiple lights that the Bateses and Pomonas have the luxury of using.
And just a last quick word, Seth Allen, you are in some ways analogous institutions. Bates and Pomona have a lot of similarities. Why do you think why will you continue to use the SAT? Just real briefly.
Well, I guess it is the larger question. Why use the SAT? Why use letters of recommendations? Why pore over extracurricular activities? Why ask for any of this information when any of this can be gamed? Mm. There was a talk earlier on about privilege and how that impacts. You could say that about any facet of the admissions process. So I actually think this is the larger question about, is an admission system that's been around for six decades still appropriate in this day and age when our young people have changed? And the resources to go to college have changed.
We'll have to leave it there. Fascinating question. We'll look forward to talking about it further. Bill Hiss, Seth Allen, thanks very much. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.